Hello, my name is Jody Lemott, and welcome to Dream Gardens, where we talk up the kids' books we love. On the last two podcasts, I gave some background information about two well-known awards for children's books, the Caldecott Awards and the Newbery Honors. And that got me to thinking about all the other awards that are given out for children's books for various reasons. So over the next several podcasts, I'm going to focus on a few of those other awards, the kind of books they celebrate, and some of the recent books chosen as best of the bunch. Today I'm going to focus on the Coretta Scott King Award. This is how the award is described on the American Library Association website. The Coretta Scott King Book Awards are given annually to outstanding African-American authors and illustrators of books for children and young adults that demonstrate an appreciation of African-American culture and universal human values. The award commemorates the life and work of Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr., and honors his wife, Mrs. Coretta Scott King, for her courage and determination to continue the work for peace and world brotherhood. This award has been given out each year since 1970 to many outstanding Black American authors and illustrators. Some of the works honored in years past have been The People Could Fly, American Black Folk Tales by Virginia Hamilton, Slam by William Dean Myers, Bud Not Buddy by Christopher Paul Curtis, and One Crazy Summer by Rita Williams Garcia. Just recently, the 2017 award was given to Congressman John Lewis and Andrew Adine for March, Book 3, which is the third book in the graphic novel series detailing Congressman Lewis's firsthand account of the brutality visited upon and the extraordinary courage demonstrated by men and women during the civil rights movement of the 1950s and 60s, leading up to the march from Selma to Montgomery in 1965. In addition to the Coretta Scott King Book Award, there's also the Coretta Scott King John Steptoe Award for New Talent, which celebrates new upcoming authors, and the Coretta Scott King Virginia Hamilton Award for Lifetime Achievement, which celebrates an author or illustrator's lifetime body of work. If you want to find out about more award winners or some good book suggestions, go to the American Library Association website, ala.org, and click on the awards link. All right, my guest today is Ashley Mills Monahan, author of the children's book A Little Goes a Long Way. Her website can be found at alittlegoesalongwaybook.com. Thank you for joining me today, Ashley.
Thanks for having me.
Now, I mentioned this book you wrote, A Little Goes a Long Way. What is the book about and what inspired you to write it?
Well, A Little Goes a Long Way is a picture book aimed at the 2 to 6 year old. And it's about a little boy called Finn and his little wiener dog, Sausages. And together they learn to use only what they need around the house while they're helping with the chores. It's a simple, relatable lesson for the early, the young child. But it's also a kind of a starting point for a deeper conversation about conservation, which I think is a lesson for all of us to, be more mindful of. And I wrote it. I've always worked with children. I've got 2 children now myself. And so we're constantly refer to my book. I'm constantly receiving fan mail from other readers of the book and talking about, what a nice relatable lesson it has and such. That's really why I wrote it, because it was a bigger discussion on the importance of conservation, preservation, that kind of thing.
Yeah. And what kind of feedback have you gotten on the book?
It's been receiving a lot of really wonderful feedback. Reviews on Amazon. I've won 4 awards so far. It's fun. It's a simple little story. Again, I receive fan mail, pictures and things like that of someone's child reading the book and following the lesson. And, I'll get a text from somebody saying, oh, I referred to your book today. And, we were going to cook dinner and she almost put too much salt in. And, we were talking about your book and da 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 da. So, little things like that. It's nice to hear that kind of positive feedback.
It sounds like a very interesting book. The book you chose today is The BFG by Roald Dahl, which was first published in the U.S. in 1982 by R.R. Donnelly and Sons, and it has illustrations by Quentin Blake. What can you tell readers who are unfamiliar with this book what it's all about?
The BFG is about a little orphan, Sophie, and she befriends the big friendly giant, who is this vegetarian giant that blows dreams in children's windows at night. And I chose it because it's a fun kind of a classic for me. The language is fun in the story, and the overall message of Finding Friendships in Unexpected Places.
When did you first read this book?
I can remember reading this book when I was maybe 10, maybe in third or fourth grade. I can remember the teacher reading it. It's a very fun read aloud book, the language. I forgot how fun Roald Dahl was to read. I mean, I sat down and read this in two sittings, which is very unusual for me. Like, I've got two kids under the age of four, so having the time to sit down and read, you just go through it, you know?
Like you mentioned, it's a great read-aloud book, and the language in particular, this character, the BFG, the big friendly giant, the way he talks is just so unusual. Do you want to talk a little bit about, you know, his way of speaking and how that kind of really stands out in the book?
Sure. So actually recently I saw a BBC documentary on the life of Roald Dahl, and his wife, Patricia Neal, she suffered a stroke. And so she had to learn how to talk. And so while she was learning how to talk again, her words were all jumbled. And there we have what formed into this language of the BFG. And it's this playful, imaginative, play on words language. And it's fun to read. It's fun to hear. And it's interesting that we can understand it because we don't talk like him, but yet we understand it in kind of the same way that, you know, when you read Shakespearean language, you don't talk like this, but you understand it. Or like the way I can understand my two-year-old, but like I take him to the park and other moms probably can't understand what he's saying. I think his play with it, with the words, is also kind of relative to the younger child that might make up words himself in that imaginative play. And I think it's one of the reasons why I'm so drawn to Roald Dahl is because of the interesting language that he uses, because it's so different to what I can write.
Now, the other major character in this book is Sophie.
Well, she's an orphan, and she finds this friendship almost like a parent-like figure in the BFG, and we love her, and we want to see her succeed. We want her to be okay because we know and we see that she's lonely and orphaned, and she's just so cute. And then on the other side of it is the BFG is this giant, but he's lonely and alienated and different from the other giants. So by the end of the story, we really kind of see that they need one another, and they both kind of become the hero.
And you mentioned before one of the giants' jobs is to collect dreams and how dreams are presented sort of in this fog that the giant goes through and collects and bottles up and brings around to other children to share, to give them good dreams. It's sort of the way kids think about dreams in a way, is something outside of themselves. And just wonder if you want to talk about that a little bit, about this notion of this sort of childlike notion of dreams that he presents.
I think children handle anything that's super imaginative, and this concept of dreams being blown through the window and, you know, or being caught in this meadow and in dreamland, to what the BFG refers to at one part of the book. It's this message of keep dreaming and put your dream out there and let's hope you catch it in the end, and hopefully, you know, it'll become a reality.
Now, at the heart of this book, there's this this relationship between Sophie and the giant, and it's kind of a friendship, but I think you mentioned before it's almost a parent-child in a way as well, although a very unusual sort of parent-child. So what do you make of this relationship between the two, the nature of it?
I think the underlying message I was trying to say before was, you know, you can find friendship in anyone. And this is, I think, a real powerful message for kids, particularly around this age, around 10, because they're learning about their social skills and in their friendships. And, I mean, one could argue it's kind of the ultimate, you know, metaphor for school, you know, with bullies and stuff like that, and keep the power of the message, which is let's be kind to one another, and we can find powerful friendships in anything, even a big friendly giant.
Now, even though this is about friendship, and there's a nice sweetness to sort of their relationship, but like a lot of Roald Dahl books, there's a very dark sort of other side to it. You know, in particular, this idea of giants going out and eating what they call human beings. But part of that's kind of its appeal as well. So what do you make of this dark edge and how kids relate to that as well?
Well, this is kind of the very reason I won't share this book yet with my four-year-old. We've gone through about five or six other Roald Dahl books. We just finished Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, and he loved it. But when I picked up the BFG, I was like, this is kind of, there is, it's that scary element to it where, you know, giants are roaming around the streets gobbling up sleeping children. But for the older child that can kind of accept, you know, and be able to handle reality versus fantasy, this edge is kind of, it's interesting and it keeps you reading. And that's what I think you want. That's what I think Roald Dahl wants is, you know, to want your kids to find books interesting, keep the story interesting. I think at one point, the documentary I mentioned earlier, he said, you know, boring, happy people that do very little aren't interesting. You know, you have to keep that edge there so that it becomes interesting and you want to keep reading.
In some ways, especially the second half of the book, it's almost a comedy of manners, kind of a satire of the English and their sort of sense of the right way to behave.
Right. She meets the queen. And I think that my take on the book as well is kind of an insight to the whole world, really. I mean, because the giants sort of, they visit a lot of different countries in throughout the book. And I kind of think that's an opportunity to discuss, you know, world geography as well.
Roald Dahl, you know, he wrote a lot of books, and everybody has their own particular favorite. He has been quoted as saying this of all his books, of all his children's books anyway, that it was his own personal favorite. And, you know, obviously you picked it. It's your own particular favorite, too. What is it about this particular one that makes it really stand out for you?
It's interesting. There's a passage in the very end. It's like the very last page. I'll read it. It says the BFG expressed a wish to learn how to speak properly, and Sophie herself, who loved him as she would a father, volunteered to give him lessons every day. She even taught him how to spell and how to write sentences, and he turned out to be a splendid, intelligent pupil. In his spare time, he read books. He became a tremendous reader. He read all of Charles Dickens, whom he no longer called Dahl's Chickens, and all the Shakespeare, and literally thousands of other books. He also started to write essays about his own past life. When Sophie read some of them, she said, "These are very good. I think perhaps one day you can become a real writer." I think that the BFG, along with a lot of other Roald Dahl characters, I think he writes about himself. And I really think it's present in the BFG. There's not only this sweet friendship and humor going on, but there's courage and empathy and perseverance that you kind of take away from the book as a whole. It's imaginative, it's fun, it's this classic I that stuck with me, you know. And, you know, the action is exciting and it gets to the point. It's quick to read. It's funny because I mentioned that I was, you know, going through a few Roald Dahl books with my four-year-old son, and I don't remember reading Charlie the Chocolate Factory. I only remember watching the film. And so when we finished that one, I almost thought to myself, maybe that, like, this is up there with the BFG. I mean, that was a kind of a classic too. I mean, I think I put them on par with one another. But again, you can also see that Willy Wonka is perhaps Roald Dahl himself. And so I think that sort of theme kind of comes through in a lot of his books. And perhaps that's why I feel the BFG is kind of a special one.
Were there any other passages besides the one you just shared that you'd like to share as well?
I really love the... the part where they're talking about whiz popping. Mm-hmm. Do you remember that? He's talking about the whiz poppers. He says, "What?" cried the BFG. "No, Frob Scottle, no. Whiz popping, no. Glumptious music, no. Boom, boom, boom. Absolutely not." That's when he's talking to the queen. Hold on, let me see if I can find the other bit here. Oh, yes, here it is. "Everyone is whiz-popping, if that's what you call it," Sophie said. "Kings and queens are whiz-popping. Presidents are whiz-popping. Glamorous film stars are whiz-popping. Little babies are whiz-popping. But where I come from, it's not polite to talk about it." "Redonkulous," said the BFG. "If everyone is making whiz-poppers, then why not talk about it? We is now having a swiggle of this delicious frog scuttle, and you will see the happy result."
Ashley, thank you so much for joining me today and to talk about this book. I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you. I appreciate the opportunity to reread this. I mean, I haven't touched it in a very long time, so I really thoroughly enjoyed getting the opportunity to read it again.
Thank you for joining me on Dream Gardens. The theme music, titled All Together, is provided courtesy of Purple Planet Music. You can visit them at www.purple-planet.com. Podcast cover art is provided by Creative Pro 180, courtesy of Fiverr, which can be found at www.fiverr.com. You can visit me at jleemott.com, that's jleemott.com, or follow me on Twitter at dreamgardensjlm. Dream Gardens Podcast is also available through iTunes and Stitcher. Until next time, keep dreaming, keep growing, and keep reading.